My name is Rolf Schumann, and I'm optimistic about Germany's future of tech and our talent.
The Optimist. Conversations with leaders and industries shaping Europe's future. Exploring the ideas and innovations driving progress across the continent.
Welcome to The Optimist, brought to you by Tech by Handelsblatt. I'm Felix Zeltner, I'm your host. I'm a journalist from Germany, living in New York City. And I have the honor on this brand new format to take you all over Europe and explore the future of what is happening on the continent together with its leaders. And our first ever guest today on The Optimist is the co-CEO of Schwarz Digits, Rolf Schumann. So exciting to have him, not only because he is the co-host, or the Gastgeber, as they say in German, for the Tech by Handelsblatt conference in May. He is also a technology leader that for more than three decades has led teams and companies in Europe, in North America, in the Middle East, and has returned to Germany to build what he calls digital sovereignty. What does that mean? What does it look like? Why is he so invested in it? This is what we're covering on this podcast. And we're also talking about his son that launched a business out of high school. We're talking about the apps Rolf uses on his phone. And we're talking about what Europe needs at this point and what he's most optimistic about. Enjoy this conversation with a digital optimist, Rolf Schumann. Welcome. Rolf, the tech conference by Handelsblatt is premiering in Heilbronn in May. I'm very excited that we are having the first conversation about this conference and everything adjacent to it today. The conference Tech by Handelsblatt will be gathering European leaders for the very first time in the middle of your campus, the Schwarz campus, to build a quote-unquote cluster of optimism. That is really the tagline of this event. Rolf, why did you decide to be the co-host of this new gathering?
When you look today in Germany, there's a lot of bad mood around the future, and especially what we mean about Germany and Europe. We have upcoming elections, and there are also some parties who paint a really black picture about the economy, future, and our prosperity. We all know that the growth did not meet our expectations. On the other hand, we see a very aggressive America with an America first attitude also in tech and digital. Mm-hmm. What we have to see, we have so many talented people, a lot of knowledge, and absolutely courageous entrepreneurs in Germany and Europe. We are still having our extremely successful mid-sized businesses with a lot of hidden champions. Mm-hmm. We must, and this is really what we have to do, we must use this expertise. We must use this domain expertise and knowledge to succeed in transforming our society. The transformation is all about digitalization and AI. And you know what? This is the key aspect of Germany's and also Europe's future. Together with Handelsblatt, and this is what we do, we are creating a strategic platform mm-hmm. with a tech to strengthen exactly two things, the innovation and also an economic ecosystem. And I think in Europe in the long term with a tech.
Wow, very cool to hear that this is going to become an ecosystem even. And I'm so excited to be in Heilbronn. I have never been to Heilbronn. I'm based out of New York City. So when you just said very aggressive America, my ears perked up because I think I know what you're talking about. The news are full of it these days. But let's stay with Heilbronn for a moment, because for people like me who don't know Heilbronn, what's your favorite thing about this place?
Well, Heilbronn is a kind of an underdog. And I tell you, there is nothing worse when you're an underdog and being underestimated. So at the end of the day, it's a good thing. When you look at Heilbronn, we have a broad network of partners, and they're coming from private as well public sectors, which are doing massive investments in infrastructure, education, and also young companies around digitalization. What you find in Heilbronn is really a down-to-earth attitude. Heilbronn just built up something unique, a huge ecosystem around crucial topics for the future, including a strong focus on digital, as well AI, as well cybersecurity. Mm-hmm. And there is a huge ecosystem evolving around educational research with the Bildungscampus and the TU Munich, as well the ETH Zurich, the Heilbronn 42, our coding school, and of course the EPI, our innovation park for artificial intelligence. Believe it or not, Heilbronn is really sexy.
But how did you lure the MIT, the TU Munich, how did you lure them to Heilbronn? How did you make it sexy for them? Because you have to start with someone and, you know.
Here's the point. When you want to do something around education and research, you have to build a melting pot and you have to get the right people together. And what happened with the Bildungscampus, we brought the right people together. We have also partnerships to Singapore, Stanford, Oxford, and Jerusalem. So the point is, if you want to get attractive in the talent space or the research space, you have to bring the right people together. And this is exactly what happened here. And out of this, of course, the young people will come because they want to participate here.
Very impressive, turning an underdog into a new ecosystem, how you're looking at that. And I know that you are walking the talk. You have yourself lived all and led companies all around the world. You are yourself part of this new ecosystem and in the center of it. But what some people might find a little bit confusing is that you're actually the Schwarz Group is known more as a so-called discounter, the German-English word that we're using just like handy to describe grocery consumer goods. And why is it so important to you and your group to build a new digital behemoth that's both online and offline, as you just said, campus, in the middle of Germany? How come you, that most people know from shopping, are doing this?
I think it's more obvious than people see it right now because with the Schwarz Group, we are Europe's largest retailer. And it's very simple. If you want, with your company, stay relevant in the future, you need to master digitalization for your business model. There is no alternative and there is no compromise. Mm-hmm. So digital transformation will have an impact on every single organization and company. So if you don't take it serious, you might not be relevant anymore. Mm-hmm. And to be very clear, we have to get this done for one reason. We have the responsibility for 600,000 employees and their families, as well our complete suppliers and partners. We're talking about multiple tens of thousands entities, again, with families behind it. Wow. And with all respect, we don't have to do this for the next 2, 3, 4, 5 years. We have to do this for this generation, the next generation, and the generation after next generation. You really have to think long-term doing this. And to do this, it's so crucial that you understand what a cloud means for digital transformation. Mm-hmm. This is why we came to the point that none of the hyperscalers could really fulfill our requirements and needs we had, how we would like to run a cloud and store data based on the GDPR. This is why we suddenly had to develop the cloud for ourselves. No joke, we developed the cloud for ourselves because what you found on the market from the hyperscalers could not fulfill our requirements. At the end, we figured out we have a lot of values coming from sovereignty and independency. And then, of course, as a consequence, we did this for ourselves. We did the same for cyber, the same for communication, as well in the AI space, and now even in the workplace. So at the end of the day, we did this for ourselves. And other companies suddenly said, hey, this is relevant for me. And they showed interest. And this is how we started offering this for the external market and opened our doors. And this is how we turned our activities into the company called Schwarz Digits. But at the end of the day, it was just to fulfill our own requirements to make sure our company will stay relevant for next years.
I can't help to compare this with Amazon. I mean, they were selling goods and then they had to build data centers. And then they now started to have AWS as the biggest part of their entire business. And they are among these hyperscalers that you just mentioned alongside with Google, Microsoft and others. So what do you say to people who are listening right now thinking, Rolf is just building an Amazon? He's just building a profit-oriented monopolist in Europe.
I think this is a big difference. Let's put it this way. We are both working in the retail space, but the key difference is Amazon was building up tech capacity and they had an overcapacity they offered for others. and we were coming from different point of view. We were looking for sovereign services, so we didn't have to build a new Amazon. So what we did is we figured out that the digital services we have today in the market available, which you can leverage for your company, did not match our requirements for independence and sovereignty, so we had to build it by ourselves. So it's a different, let's say, starting point, but of course mm-hmm. we both come from the retail, which is the only thing we have in common.
Okay. But of course there could be a thought around, well, there is already maybe more open data solutions, sometimes even provided from regional and federal governments in Germany and Europe when you want to build your own digital ecosystem. So why not modeling with and after those instead? Why building it from scratch for profit?
Look, we work very closely together with open source, and also our cloud is based on open source. So we understand the initiatives and the advantages. This is why we leverage them. And we also have a lot of money for the other companies and organizations who run on Stackit. So, for example, there's some different mm-hmm. offerings from the office space, which we are hosting because of our sovereign cloud infrastructure. But one thing we always have to keep in mind, a very important aspect of sovereignty is the freedom of choice. So mm-hmm. on the one hand side, it's independency, but also the freedom of choice. And this is exactly essential to have different approaches. So you should have multiple alternatives. And then this is also why we have this collaboration with Google. So on the one hand side, people say, hey, Google is not sovereign. We said, not at the first glance when you define it from our, let's say, German perspective. But we found a way to run your data private and sovereign and protected in the Google framework of the workspace. So we make it on another level of sovereignty. It's your keys. The keys are not shared. The data is exported to your cloud. So this is what we are saying. Sovereignty also gives you the freedom of choice. If you don't want to do this, you can always go with alternatives.
I saw you speak about this topic for the very first time just a year ago. And I think Schwarz Digits itself is still in its infancy, so to speak, but you're growing quickly. And this thing that you're really talking about over and over again, and I saw you talk about for the first time and was impressed by immediately, is this topic of digital sovereignty. I hadn't heard that before. And since then, I feel like it's become a label almost that you attach to yourself, but that also a lot of other people find relevant, find interesting, want to be a part of. So you are a coder at heart. You really know what digital sovereignty means. And I live in New York City and I live this transatlantic life myself. And when somebody says digital sovereignty, it means I trust Europe or the heart of Europe, where Heilbronn is, more than the US. My ears always perk up. So why do you actually choose Europe over the US or other places when it comes to the future of digital infrastructure?
This is a good point, but I would never say that we've chosen Europe over the US. The key thing is, and this is what we have to put on the table, international alliances are not lived according to the same values of all partners. What does it mean? Let's take the example of China first. So in China, the government or the state says, look, we know what's good for you. Give me your data, and then based on the data I have about you, I will organize your life. And you know what? If you like to laugh and like to live in such a system, this is perfect. But it's very clear, the sovereignty is there, controlled and defined by the state and government. When you go to the US, and this is what I mean when we go around, it's not the government or the state, but it's the companies. Look, there are some companies, when you look at the digital companies from the Valley, who say, I know what exactly good for you. You give me your data, and then we will make sure whatever you consume is best for you. If you like this, that you trust full the companies, do it. Where we live in Europe, it's different. We have a completely different perspective of the values regarding data privacy and GDPR. And this is exactly why I'm saying the two, let's say, value sets of the US as also China, who are the prominentest providers of hyperscalers and infrastructure, digital infrastructure, do not match our perspective, how we see data protection. how we see privacy, how we see what happens with your data, because this is a big difference of Europe. So all these kind of digital services acts and whatever we have, also what we have around the GDPR, mm-hmm. is to protect the individual, which means we want to protect our values. And the only thing what we did is we realized that I think everybody realized this, at least in the last year, when you look at the license cost, that there are some individual monopolies who are increasing and exploiting their power. And this is what we saw. And they don't do this because they're evil. They do this because they have a different perspective and mindset on data privacy. And at the end of the day, this leads into absolutely dependencies and an imbalance in power. And this is never useful for partnerships on eye level. This isn't how we work. We want to work that they come to a table, they can set up whenever you want. If you can't stand up anymore, something goes wrong. And I give you one example. When you remember when we had the dependencies of Russian gas during the conflict in the Ukraine, we were so shocked in Germany that 55% of our gas was from Russia. It was a disaster. But when you look at this, you go to the energy sector, and out of the energy sector, in the segment of gas, 55% came from Russia. If you now would compare this to the dependency on digital solutions, I can tell you that 82% are coming outside Germany. So the question is, and this is not a segment in the energy sector, it's across all digital dependencies. And the question is, why do we run in similar situations we have faced just 1 year ago?
Wow. Well, I certainly understand the argument. However, I'm thinking, is it even possible to be sovereign digitally? I mean, you, Schwarz Group, just announced a few weeks back that you signed a huge agreement with Google. Is it even possible to work without the others?
It is possible to do a lot of things sovereign, but in the case of Google, we realized that a workspace or workplace product cannot be redeveloped so easily. So we have to use it. But the question is, and this is why we had this huge partnership with Google. Google understood our value set and needs and requirements for sovereignty. And Google allowed us that we could, for our data, use our own encryption keys. Google allowed us that we can export the data in a case of Black Swan event, that you then can use it with other programs or solutions. So at the end of the day, Google understood that sovereignty is there. If you look at the workspace solution with Google, of course, the sovereignty is on the level of the data, not of the application, which is still running in a cloud, mastered by Google. But at the end of the day, and this is what I'm saying, you can build something sovereign. You start, and this is what we did with an own cloud, where you store your data, where you process your data. Then you realize, of course, that in cybersecurity, this is also a dimension you have to uncover. And also here, you want to have independent solutions. And then you continue with communications, for example, or artificial intelligence. And this is how you get there. It's possible, mm-hmm. but you have to start at one point in time.
I'm a journalist, not a coder like you. And to me, someone explained once that the cloud is just someone else's computer. So in Google's case, did you sort of manage to be sovereign in a way that they put someone else's computer in that case close by to you? Is it a European somebody else's computer? Or where are you actually storing the data?
No, that's what we did. So first of all, we made sure that the data resides in our, let's say, defined infrastructure in Europe. And then, of course, we made sure that whatever is running on the systems, let's say, hosted offered by Google, which are, even if they're in Europe, that the data can only be decrypted by ourselves and not even by Google. Mm-hmm. And this was the key difference to drive the sovereign data solutions for the workspace.
Interesting. I would like to talk about your personal digital sovereignty for a moment, because you said in an interview that you completely changed the apps you're using on a daily basis. Can you just share what apps you deleted on your own device and what their replacements are?
This is exactly the transformation I did and I'm doing from WhatsApp to Wire, because it's about communication. I'm totally Yeah, I was totally surprised to see which kind of data, private data, location-based and so on, you share when you use the WhatsApp. And I was, of course, shocked about the fact to see how WhatsApp is using their own, let's say, TNCs in a way which do not match my expectation. So from a data protection.
What are TNCs? Sorry.
Terms and conditions. The terms and conditions they have when they tell you what do you have to do to use WhatsApp. And then for me, this was the point. So the first thing I did is, of course, I used a special dedicated number to be able to communicate with others. And now as we found an alternative, which is certified from PSI as well NATO confidential, a messenger which runs on our own cloud stack it, and of course is fulfilling not only our requirements, it's also not collecting other data. We came to the point that this is the right way to move forward.
Is WhatsApp the only app you deleted, or are there others as well?
I was very sensitive even before, so I didn't have too many apps which did not fit my mindset and my value set.
But on your phone, there would be no Meta apps anymore, I suppose.
They never had been there.
They never had been there.
Because I think I deleted them already some years ago when they had this huge scandal about the Cambridge Analytica.
Ah, okay.
This is the point. This is what I mean. A lot of people forget that people have these scandals around data privacy or data protection. Yeah. The problem is, this wasn't a technical issue. This is an issue about the attitude. It's the same. Look at the attitude of Microsoft in regards of cybersecurity. Microsoft's operating system or cloud system is, from a cybersecurity point of view, and this is not my quote, this is like I'm just quoting Gartner from the last conference, this is the worst you can get. And they don't take it serious. Look, this is a difference to when you look at Google. Google had an incident in 2004, and from this day on, they invested tons of money that this didn't happen again. So sovereignty, data protection, privacy, security, it's a question of attitude. And as you said, those friends from Meta had the wrong attitude, and this was the point where the apps already were deleted years ago.
But how did you find out? Did you just do something that nobody else does, and calling myself guilty here, actually reading the terms and conditions for once, these pages long things that we all sign up for when we install a new app? Or how did you find out about this?
First of all, you find smart journalists who write down what you agree when you put on the TNCs at the beginning when you open the app. And then, of course, you can jump and go into this. Mm. But it's public knowledge that they are collecting what they can do with your name, data, connections, location-based, shopping information. Mm-hmm. So it's common knowledge coming from some great journalists.
Well, it's definitely journalists are smarter than me in this point. What's an app that you tried out or that you recommend trying out at the moment?
It's Wire, the most secure messenger. This is really what I can tell you. No personal information, protect you yourself. This is the app I'm trying. And I've seen the team is really very motivated. They will bring some new versions end of Q1, so I'm super happy.
Wire, just to understand, is a software that was, or a software company, it was started in Switzerland. And there were some people involved who previously worked for Skype. That's how much I know about this. Why is it so important to you? Did you even invest in the app with Schwarz?
No, after we identified this as the most secure messenger, we also invested in Wire because we are using this full-fledged, and we are right now preparing the rollout for our employees. And then, of course, we did an investment, not a big one, but to make sure that there won't be any compromise on sovereignty and security, because we do not want to go on a technology where you cannot make sure that the motivation why you've chosen this might be getting a little bit blurring over the time.
You said so brilliantly in the beginning that everything we do right now, we are at the mercy of these platforms, and it includes our own homes. And it includes once I step out on the street here in New York City, there's dozens of cameras filming me. My phone is tracking my steps. It's just everywhere. When it comes to your own home, do you have a favorite technology that you use actually at home that makes you maybe sovereign in your own four walls?
I'm not sure if it makes me sovereign, but it makes me happy. It's the absolutely ultra high-tech coffee grinder for my coffee and espresso beans.
Is it connected to the internet?
Absolutely not.
Okay. So there's, even in your life, there's a piece of analog technology that's that makes me optimistic.
The funny thing is I have an air gap, so I will send updates by downloading them and putting them in, but it's like kind of air gapped. I would never put my grinder. Imagine somebody is changing the settings and the coffee doesn't taste anymore. It would be disaster, complete disaster.
Are you an espresso kind of guy or more like just plain pure coffee?
No, I'm the espresso guy. So,
okay, not a drip guy. Okay, just to know, because I turned into somewhat of a coffee snob just by living in New York City. There's so many people here who take this very seriously, and the espresso machines are now car-sized in some cafes here, so I'm very happy that you're following that trend. You have lived and worked yourself outside of Europe. You have lived in the Silicon Valley, in Israel. What did you, just coming from Germany, what did you have to unlearn when you got there, when you left the continent for the first time?
I think the first thing I learned moving to the Silicon Valley, but also to Israel, is that you do not ask for permission. You ask for forgiveness. When I came from Germany, we are so over-engineered and bureaucratic. And this takes us all this openness and creativity, which you really need for entrepreneurship and a little bit kind of risk-taking as an entrepreneur. And this was the first thing I totally, unlearned, as you said, or asked. On the other side, this doesn't mean that you are completely running into an anarchy. It is, between us, a kind of attitude to take a little bit risk and really try things first. And then if things don't work, you can apologize. Mm-hmm.
That it sounds a little bit like moving fast and breaking things, which right now has a little bit of gotten a bad rap here since the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Fail fast and early. This is what I can tell you.
Yeah. And you just said that when you left Europe, you learned to not ask for permission, but ask for forgiveness. Can you share an example from when you returned to Germany, how you actually applied that?
When I returned back to Germany, I was back at SAP. And of course, what you have to do is, when you develop new technologies, when you have new ideas, in old days, you first were discussing in a lot of teams. But in today's world, where you're more agile, you have the idea, you take a small team, you try it out, and then you bring it up to the next level. So this was a clear example. And this whole transformation also to agile development is a little bit trying to do this, not to have any more top-down decisions like in the days before where you first asked the board what to do, and you bring it up more bottom-up. And then this is definitely what I've seen when I came back to Germany, back to SAP. Mm-hmm.
Does this also affect how you built Schwarz Digits? I mean, the company is very new. You started from scratch in 23. Is this something that really people can feel when they work with you?
Well, absolutely. The way we take decisions, the speed we have there, you feel that this is different. We have very, as we say, Kurzwege, short pathways to reach out to people. Mm-hmm. We are quick in decisions. And also, if a decision is wrong, we are super quick in taking the correct and right decisions.
Mm-hmm. I want to for the final part of this podcast, and thanks again for being our first guest, to talk about your calls to action for leaders all over Europe, because these are the people that are going to be on this podcast in the future. And Tech is, as we said in the beginning, building a community of European leaders who will be on this show, but then gather in Heilbronn, gather where you built your campus right now, and do very impressive work, a cluster of optimism, as Tech calls it. What kind of homework would you give the European leaders who will be on this podcast after you to build a kind of Europe that you want to live in, as Rolf?
It's tough to give guidance. Let's say more for wishes. Let's turn this into wishes. Which kind of wishes do I have for leaders instead of just giving them an advice? Because everybody has to figure out if advices are relevant or not, but a wish everybody can ask for. And the wishes I have is in Europe, and this is really what I feel from the deep bottom of my heart, we need to be more self-confident. And we should not get lost all the time in small details. And we should face the big picture. Because in the small details, you will always find a reason why things don't work. Because you don't see the big picture anymore. And we always see the glass half empty. We have to change this. Because I can tell you, we have so much more to do and to bring to the table. The other thing is, and this is what we have to always understand, when you try to change things, we have to accept that the right way is usually a bit more inconvenient than the easy way. And for our digital sovereignty, this definitely is exactly the situation. We have to get out of our comfort zone. We are really in a comfort zone and really almost very complacent right now. And I'm always saying the only place you find success before work is in the dictionary. So let's really change our attitude and get there. And the biggest and most important point in this, let's say, context is we have to change our mindset and we have to believe. If not, I'm so convinced that we become a data colony from some US or Chinese tech companies. The US already started the colonization of Europe in the hand of data. We should stop this and really get back in our attitude and be proud on what we have.
Mm-hmm. Decolonizing Europe. That's an interesting phrase that I've never heard before, but in a digital sense, it's definitely true. I talked to a Silicon Valley entrepreneur, a German Silicon Valley entrepreneur yesterday about this very topic. And he said, well, when I moved to the Silicon Valley 20 years ago, Europe was ahead because we were the first in mobile, for instance, and the Silicon Valley was looking at us for inspiration and for talent. So it was a completely different way from going from Germany to there just 20 years ago. And something happened in the meantime. And I also asked him, just like you, what should we do? And he said, well, one idea that he has is he wants to go to the schools in Germany all across the country. As schools, of course, education is regional from the States, and say, why don't you have startup as a subject? Why don't you have entrepreneurship as a subject? And why don't you have a competition that goes from your school to your city, to your region, where you can actually start a company? Could that lead to thousands, tens of thousands, or maybe even hundreds of thousands of entrepreneurs to a country that has most entrepreneurs in the world? That was just a suggestion he had for Germany, and a very interesting idea, I thought, to entertain. And of course, a very inconvenient one, changing all curriculums. But is there one idea that you have where you say this is a concrete application, maybe doesn't even have to do at Schwarz in the first place, where I say this is how we change and how we can become more self-confident, as you said, better in what we're doing, less colonized?
Look, what's funny, what you just said is what I mean. I have now a 19-year-old boy, but you know what he did in school? They founded their own company, and I was an investor. So this startup topic is already here. We have to see that we have these tools already in Germany, but obviously we didn't talk about it good enough. The point is we have this, and the education is great. I mean, look today on the first team who developed the quantum computer at Google. From the 15 people, 7 came from Germany, so our education is not so bad. We have just to keep the people here and do it right. For the startups, we don't need to change the curriculum because it's already there and we have it. But on the other side, what we should do is, again, we have to get to a startup culture. What is the problem of our startups? It is not that we don't have the schools or we don't have enough entrepreneurs. The problem is we have not the appropriate way to finance them. And I have this discussion with our governments. Instead of giving a startup a little bit funding at the beginning, give them a clear invoice. order their software, order their solutions. So this is how all the companies in the U.S. were funded. They were funded from the military, from the secret services, from the government, and they got more or less the bills paid because they were the largest customers. And what we do is we give them a little bit money, and then when they want to sell the solution to the government, which is a really good customer at the end of the day, they say, oh, you don't have enough reference customers. So we have to change the attitude how we as government and our companies are supporting startups by becoming their clients and also at the beginning having the influence that the solution is fitting much better what I want. Mm-hmm. So this is what I think we have to do because, again, our education system, we have great education. We have great universities. We have great schools. People can find a professional job and being educated in there. We have this. The question is, what do we offer those young people when they have the idea to become an entrepreneur, that they have the chance to find customers and clients?
It sounds a little bit like you're calling for a sovereign wealth fund, like Norway has it, where startups can find money that's somewhat coming from the government and then can come and turn into a revenue source for the government itself. Is that something that you would think Europe should have more?
To be honest, there is nothing bad if they help a startup, that there is a fund and they can even get a kickback. Why not? But instead of just making funds at the beginning and then see them dying of starvation over the time of the course, is absolutely the wrong approach. So this could be an option, but this is just how to get the initial fund or startup started. For me, it would be more important that when they have a startup and they have a solution, that the government would order 10,000 or 100,000 of seats, then I can tell you these companies will definitely become successful.
And what's the company that your son started, that you invested in?
It was funny. They made a kind of Instagram and social media agency for restaurants. I think they did this. I think they did this only because then they got free lunch all the time and they visit their customers. But it was really funny. It was successful. And I was the seed investor.
That's how you keep your team motivated.
Exactly. So I was really like, every day he came back, so they make the pictures of the meal, and I said, oh, you made all these great pictures, but who did eat all this food? Oh, he said, look, well, we were hungry. So it was funny.
But next to your son, is there another European that inspires you? Maybe a European where you say, this is a leader I really look to for inspiration that you maybe recommend to follow? And learn more about what they do. You meet so many people, you're at so many conferences and so many rooms where important things happen. Just asking for an inspiring European that you recommend.
I tell you one thing about motivation and young people and inspiring thoughts. I think we have so many great people and great content, but if you really want to make a difference, you should look every morning into the mirror and just use the day to make it a better version of the person you see there. This will make you successful. It's not that you follow or imitate others. I really can tell you, we have so many great people, and this is what I see, what I meet. Believe in yourself. It's a question of what belief, but you have to start every day to become better. And I'm always saying, you know, excuses make a day very easy, but the future very hard. And discipline makes the day hard, but the future easy. It's your choice. And this is, for me, the only recommendation I can give to young people instead of following or imitating or doing others, because they will be always a step ahead.
Hey, this is like self-help, Rolf, here. This is very inspiring. I like that. Rolf, my last question to you is, it's a big one. When you think about this continent, in 10 years from now, 2035, can you paint a picture for us that resembles your vision of our continent?
I think I can paint the picture we are working in every day, and every day in and out. And this is, I'm definitely convinced that we will become a leader in cybersecurity, artificial intelligence, and quantum computing. And this will be made in Germany, for Europe and beyond. And we will be leading definitely in sovereign digital solutions because we have the right digital value set.
Thank you, Rolf. Very inspiring. listening to you, learning from you, and I look forward to seeing you in Heilbronn. I want to thank you for being the inaugural guest on The Optimist. And I think you really are one. Did I get that right?
I'm definitely not the pessimist. And even if the glass is empty, I think there's still a drop inside.
Thank you. And I like that. And I would like to thank you and your team. And of course, Sina and Alexandra on the Handelsblatt tech team and everybody else who's co-creating The Optimist. Rolf, any last words from you before we say goodbye and auf Wiedersehen?
No, it's just the last word will be see you in Heilbronn.
See you in Heilbronn. The sexy Heilbronn. Bye-bye, Rolf.
Okay, thank you. Take care. Bye.
Thanks for listening to The Optimist. For more insights and updates about tech, visit us at tech-europe.org. The Optimist is produced by Tech by Handelsblatt. Music by Christian Heinemann. Stay curious.